on 666 AM, digital radio and the ABC Radio app. This is Drive with Adam Shirley on ABC Radio Canberra.
For the last few decades, you know, our pace of life has gotten so much faster. The brain just in its natural state is multitasking. So now that we've added a lot of sort of electronic media, SMSs, you know, music on in the background, TV on in the background, you know, parents or anyone indeed in a relationship is often, their brains are so busy, and we actually know from research that the multitasking, the wandering mind actually gets drawn to the more negative and is not as able to be creative and optimistic and skillful, really, than the very focused mind. So I think it's actually quite, you know, tough for parents these days.
It does feel like we're perpetually switched on. Even if you're walking from, I don't know, a bus stop on your way home, that couple of hundred metres that you walk, out comes a smartphone, checking if there's anything that you need to know about. It's always being plugged in and thinking about something.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And at some level, you know, I think it's almost a way of helping us get out of the things that we don't want to think about, the concerns that we have, you know, the argument with a partner we didn't handle well, the time we sort of spoke sternly to a distressed child when part of us knows we should have shown more kindness. So what I notice with young parents is, and I think this research is strongly indicating this now, that the current... currently, we are really experiencing a lot of self-criticism and using distraction, or when parents sort of focus on controlling behaviours or getting jobs done, is often in a way to be trying to do something where they can feel effective, because actually being very present in the moment with a tantruming toddler or a surly teenager or a husband who's just stressed and, you know, poorly attuned, that's actually really tough.
So is there a difference? I guess you give many examples of a softly approach in parenting where you're in tune with what's going on with those around you and you try and respond to that. But so many other parenting manuals have recommended being stern and making sure the children know the boundaries, and there's all this time out, and that's, you know, counting to three for bad behaviour. And it almost seems like a bit of a contradiction.
Yeah, it's a very important point, actually. When we talk about kindness, we're actually talking about kindness but firmness, a kindness that comes very much together with wisdom. And with what sort of children do we want to create? We've got to actually remember that we're trying to sort of imagine that it is our job as parents to help our children survive skillfully in the world. So the boundaries are definitely important. They're crucially important. But they actually have to make sense to children, so that when parents bark orders, you know, a naughty child or whatever, a distressed child, let's say, when they receive an angry tone from a parent and a punishment, actually the child's not going to learn very well in that situation. So the extended timeout and the punishment forms of changing behaviour quite clearly don't work. That's what the research says. And so when a parent can actually just recognise, A, when a behaviour just needs to be ignored, that's the most skillful thing to do, or whether the child needs a hug because actually they're going through a very difficult time at school, or whether they need good eye contact and a calm voice and a very clear boundary, because it can be very difficult to set boundaries for children when both the child and the parent are distressed, and it's a skill that needs to be learned.
At what age can you start practicing this skill on your children? Because I've got a 2-year-old and she's totally irrational. She spat in my face this morning because I gave her the wrong temperature milk. I know, right?
Well, look, be reassured. When children act out in sort of angry ways with us, that actually at some level means they're secure with us. It's not a thinking thing that your little girl has done, but actually quite literally, as soon as the child is born, they're hardwired to tune into emotion. So a newborn child will turn away from a person with a frown on their face and will be drawn to the person who's actually got a sort of a more, positive expression and a smile. So with that sort of behaviour, being able to actually make eye contact, talk slowly and calmly and with a softer rather than a sterner tone, you can deliver a boundary, you can say no, you can actually say, okay, no more of this fruit now or whatever was spat out, and next time we'll try it in a different way. Mm. And in terms of the learning behaviour, the children actually learn that much more effectively because what they want is to be close to us. So it's actually very normal behaviour that they act out, that they say no. That's actually part of normal development. It's just when we get caught in a punitive cycle or they actually feel our anger and frustration acutely that, you know, we end up with children who ultimately could end up quite self-critical, which is sort of the so many other things going on in society which increases self-criticism that, we've got to be careful with this. But I don't want to make it sound too easy. You know, what I'm describing is not easy, and that's why, you know, mindfulness training in the true sense of the word is a proper training because it is not easy to be kind and firm and wise and skillful with boundaries.
I'm going to ask you about some of those techniques very shortly. Dr. Diana Korora is the author and psychiatrist behind the book Mindfulness for Mums and Dads. I think it's a good time to bring it up, given it's school holidays and we're about to spend 4 days in each other's company over the Easter long weekend. Of course, you haven't always been a psychiatrist. Where did your experience with mindfulness begin?
I was a general practitioner and found that very hard, trying to sort of help people who were often struggling in their lives, and I had 10 or 15 minutes to try and help them feel that I understood. And then it was actually being a mother, and then when I was having my, between my second and third child, I did psychiatry training and I thoroughly enjoy it. My first really, important exposure to that came at a very stressful period for me when I found my way through serendipity really to a person who was a counsellor, but he clearly had a mindfulness background, and he heard my story without actually offering any particular comment on it, and then led me through a very deep body scan for about 20 minutes. And
What's a body scan, a deep body scan?
It is a way of helping build concentration and attention, taking it away from thinking and actually in a systematic way going through sensations in the body. So you start either at the top of the body or down at the feet, and you start to direct the focus of attention to bodily sensations. And, we know that, essentially it helps us get out of the thinking mind. It helps stabilize attention, and it actually changes the way the brain works. And indeed, the more body scans are done, the more, from a neurological point of view, the body is learning to regulate emotion. As sort of nonsensical as that sounds, at a neurological level, that is what happens. Emotion is held in the body, and when it contracts around stress, it feeds back to the brain, and actually the brain interprets that as evidence of something frightening going on. This is all very primitive stuff. You know, most of what goes on in the brain is beneath conscious awareness. But he led me through this body scan where he kept just directing me. Thoughts will come. That's perfectly normal. We can't stop thoughts. You know, now let's focus on the knee and the thigh and deepening the breath. And really after that experience, I walked out and I just felt as if things had completely shifted for me with regard to how I made sense of what was really very stressful for me at the time. And what I understand about that now, because the science really intrigues me, is that the frontal lobes of the brain, the parts of the brain that are peculiar to us as humans, which give us capacity for insight and wisdom and kindness and, you know, to be skillful, that had become switched on. So as I had told that story and it was all alive in me, the way my brain was working had changed and stuff had been integrated and I felt much less stressed about these things.
Well, that's quite an impressive outcome from what I assume was only a one-hour session with this psychologist.
Yeah, and look, it's not... I've been in the area of perinatal psychiatry for 20 years now, and it is a very rewarding way to work because, you know, I see people who would ordinarily perhaps be treated by others with medication, and I do prescribe medication when I need to, but I see people, you know, who are sometimes incredibly effective in their working lives, you know, very effective people, but come home and are not managing relationships well. And when I use mindfulness as a way of managing their emotional activation, all of a sudden the skills that they come more naturally to them in a working environment are available to them in the relationships that actually are great personal significance to them. So I suppose I don't really need to read research because I see these changes happening and I hear people tell me, look, Diane, I'm actually a bit pleased that I got depressed because I'm now living my life in a very different way and handling my relationships differently. And, you know, in that way, people learn that mindfulness properly taught is very different from a technique of relaxation. Mm.
In fact, you write here, the trap we can easily fall into is coming to rely too heavily upon what is or isn't happening in order to feel okay. And that's a very Buddhist philosophy, isn't it?
That's right. And it's quite exciting, really, that at least in some quarters of the professions of psychology and psychiatry, there is beginning to be a newfound respect for very ancient traditions. The reality is life is incredibly complicated and often very stressful. And when we learn to just accept that this is actually a part of life, so, you know, the inscrutable teenager who seems ungrateful and determined to head out with friends we're concerned about. When we learn to actually be just very present with that we actually have to build those skills, and we learn how to deepen a relationship with that teenager at that time, this actually then becomes a very meaningful part of our life. So this is sort of what is meant, you know, but unfortunately a lot of media, a lot of the way we live, it's about the hedonic treadmill. It's about, you know, getting the new car, getting the bigger house. We'll be happy when this happens. And, you know, most of us actually know that's not how it works, really. But we really do, I think, need some skills to be able to sort of manage what comes in on the news feed every day that has us frightened about the future of the planet. All these things, we actually need to learn how to manage that.
On the front cover of the book, it has a little quote from Annabelle Crabb, which is what drew me to your book, actually. I went, ooh, I love Annabelle Crabb. It says, a gem of a book full of gentle ways to change your thinking. So if anyone's listening and realising that these are wonderful outcomes that you're speaking about, are you able to share some of the techniques to get those outcomes?
Yeah. Look, I think that one of the take-home practices for the big 8-week formal mindfulness training program, so it's those training programs upon which all the research is based, whereby in 8 weeks, if you do the homework, there is evidence on MRI scans of the brain that the structure of the brain changes in ways that reduces stress and increases insight. So the take-home practice that people further down the track, years after they've finished that program, the technique that they say they use most is what's called the 3-minute breathing space. And effectively what that is that you are learning to step out of being caught up on automatic pilot. So for the first minute of that, imagine, you know, a woman just caught up in exactly the sound that you presented this, you know, this session with, this sort of cacophony of noise around her. That instead of getting disconnected and having to go away from that, she actually just grounds herself takes everything in. What are my thoughts saying? What does my body feel like? What noises can I hear? What is that child saying? You're just observing. So for a minute, you're actually taking it all in. For the next minute, you're building attention and concentration on breath. And we know from science that there is a different pattern of breathing for every emotion. That means we can induce anger by making people breathe in certain ways. This has been treatment now for PTSD. But basically, if we learn for a minute or thereabouts, it can be 30 seconds, it can be whatever your foot can afford, to bring the breath to a slow, steady pattern. And then in the final minute, it's just, again, bringing awareness back out to what is going on. And then perhaps even planting a seed, you know, before doing that. What would I like to bring to this situation? It might be patience. It might be I'd like to talk a little bit more softly rather than be yelling or whatever it is. So it's a way of actually calming down but actually getting the nervous system out of a reactive mode.
It sounds so easy, and actually even hearing you describe it there kind of put me into a very relaxed state, Dr. Korovar. Thank you for that. So that's one of the techniques. The book is full of different techniques. One of my favourite is the technique for gratitude, where you might sit around with your loved ones and you would list a couple of the things that you're grateful for that day. And if you get into the habit of doing that day in, day out, then that experience of gratitude leads to a form of better happiness, deeper happiness. It's a great book. Thank you so much for sharing some of those techniques and insights with us, Dr. Korovar.
Thank you very much, Joe.
On 666 AM, digital radio and the ABC Radio app, this is Drive with Adam Shirley on ABC Radio Canberra.